Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Yeah, there's lots of podcasts out there, but they all talk about the same thing, the same way, over and over and over and over again. Are you tired of the normal podcast? Are you tired of the same old thing? Then step out of the normal zone and step into the Roni Zone. Roni Zone Radio is a place where we look at all kinds of different things, from God to Star Wars and everything, and I mean everything in between. We look at it from a lot of different angles. We have people with different points of view that discuss things that you may never have thought about before. So get rid of the normal shows. Get rid of the normal podcasts and step into the Roni Zone. Roni Zone Radio, a very, very, very different podcast. Roni Zone Radio is available at jrdonline.com.
How's it going, Mr. Cosper?
Oh, it's going great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I have, I have Mr. John Cosper on the phone, and he is a writer, a director, he is a bunch of different things. And so what we're going to be talking about tonight is really what he's been up to. And as far as I'm concerned, he is probably the best Christian writer today. He's a funny guy. He has this actual sense of humor. I mean, I didn't think
that are you sure there's nothing in the Bible against that?
I've read the Bible a few times, and I think you can be Christian and be funny.
Yeah.
So go ahead and tell us just a little bit about how, when you discovered your sense of humor. I mean, after you became a Christian, I mean, at some point, when did you realize that actually you could laugh at things?
You know, I had always been writing scripts and writing stories and drawing strange movie posters like Hamsters with Hand Grenades and Rambo Meets the Seven Dwarfs and things like that as a child. And I'd done some radio scripts and some drama scripts and everything in junior high and high school for classes and stuff. And I was a freshman in college, working as a volunteer youth sponsor at church, and I was just leading a small group while the guy who was in charge of the newly formed youth drama group was busy stalking his girlfriend, or ex-girlfriend, I think, at the time. So I just started writing random ideas, and I don't remember what day it was or where it was. I'm sure it was just right after I dropped out of acting class in college, and given up theater forever. But yeah, I just had this realization one day. I was like, wait a minute, I can be myself. I can write this really weird and random stuff, and I could do it with a message for God. I was like, that's pretty cool.
I remember when I really started to kind of think about what you do, because, you know, it's funny. When you write, there's always a reason why you're writing, whatever it is. And there's an impetus behind it. You're trying to get a point across. And whenever I watch one of your videos, whichever one they are, there's an actual point that you're trying to get across. What I love about it, it's just never preachy and over the head. It's always very, you're kind of chuckling and you kind of wink at the audience like, right? Mm-hmm. And, what kind of response have you got from something like the Welcome to Hell video?
I haven't really had a whole lot of viewer feedback on that one. It's had a pretty good rating, but the whole idea behind that was just, you know, what would a, you know, for those who haven't seen it or heard of it, Welcome to Hell is basically a newer, higher orientation film for hell. And I guess it was probably partially inspired by I've started a couple new jobs, and you always go through that orientation process, and it's always the same thing over and over. And, it kind of feels like you're in hell sometimes. But, it was just, how would they approach that? You know, what would the policies be? Because, you know, everybody nowadays makes you watch a 30-minute film or read this huge, long document about how there shouldn't be any sexual harassment, and got to thinking about it. I was like, you know, I bet in hell, I bet they require you to sexually harass your coworkers. And it just kind of grew out of that. And it just kind of putting the whole spin on it, you know, and then the whole talking about what kind of benefits they would have in hell. Well, there's no benefit to working in hell, you know? they've got a definite expiration date on this corporation and everything, but you know, they're just they're contented to fill their lot in life or eat whatever it is that demons have and everything, and you know, when it all goes down, they're going to take as many people down with them.
I need to say really quick that John's website is righteousinsanity.com. And he has many of his videos up at YouTube, and they're just they're all pretty funny. I was watching one of them at work, actually. Honest to goodness, I started laughing and crying. It was a how to pick up a Christian babe. And to watch that guy walk back and forth a couple of times and hide behind the Bible, it's really, really funny.
Yeah, so, that's actually it's a scene from a play that I wrote called God Told Me to Break Up With You, which was based on a lot of things I'd watched other people go through and things I had experienced myself. And really, the title came out of the thing. It's the catch-all excuse the Christians use for breaking up with each other. Well, God's telling me this isn't right. And it's always a cop-out. It's the whole, it's not you, it's me. Yeah, it's you. You know, and even with Christians, it's the same thing. You know, I mean, as much as we like to think that all of our decisions, you know, always come out of prayer and everything, they come out of our selfish motives a lot of times. And, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, it was kind of a way of holding up a mirror and saying, we play the same games other people do. We just bring God into our games.
Sure.
And, you know, which is not fair to him, and it's certainly not fair to the people that we're playing the games with. But that particular scene was a lot of fun because it really spoofs the whole how Christians talk about, you know, good morals and how they're going to, you know, stay pure and holy in relationships and everything. And it's all talk. It's all smokescreen and everything. And I'm not saying it's right. You know, I'm just holding up the mirror saying, look, this is how it goes. You know, if you're going to be authentic, be authentic.
What I really like about what you write is, and I try and emulate the same thing, is it's almost like an updated hip C.S. Lewis. And where we know both sides of the story, but we write it from a present day point of view, and that's, I mean, was C.S. Lewis a big influence on you?
I've always liked C.S. Lewis's writing. So I read most of the Chronicles of Narnia as a kid and finished them as an adult, and I've always loved his you know, his books, Mere Christianity, The Great Divorce is a big favorite of mine. Just like the angle he takes on things. Some other guys I really admire, I would say Charlie Peacock, who's kind of a modern-day C.S. Lewis set to really innovative music. And then probably in my early days, my biggest influence as a writer was Steve Taylor.
Yeah.
Taught me that Christians can be sarcastic.
Yeah. And I think Frankie Schaefer was another similar type of a writer. Have you ever heard of him?
I have not, no.
Okay. Frankie Schaefer.
Something for me to learn.
Late 70s, early 80s, very similar to C.S. Lewis. But let's go back. We're going to kind of jump around. You've had a busy 2006 was a busy year for you, Mr. Cosper.
It was very busy. Just a lot of things going on with Righteous Insanity. Started shooting a lot more videos last year, kind of gearing up towards, you know, taking advantage of YouTube, but also I've always wanted to release a DVD, which hopefully is going to happen within the next 2 months. So what else happened last year? Well, I got married. I guess that's a big thing.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to bring that up.
Yeah. I got married in October and we're now expecting our first child this coming November. So, you know, we do things in the right order, unlike everybody else in this town. But it's amazing. One of the actors that I work with, he's 20. And when he found out the news, we were pregnant. He didn't know what to say. Most of the times when friends, you know, his age tell them they're pregnant, you know, the reaction is, oh, gosh, what are you going to do? You know,
right.
But Jessica and I both have good jobs, you know, nice house and mortgage and everything. So he didn't have to ask. I guess you guys, congratulations.
Yeah, actually, he can kind of smile about it and shake your hand and say, well, dude, oh, man, I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. That's fantastic, and it all pretty much, you know, from my side of things, happened pretty quick. But you were friends with her; you've known her for a while, correct?
I have. We went to high school together, and is actually the girl I used to tour with. She and I went to Iowa for a concert, and she was kind enough to put us up for the night. And just so happened, the following weekend, she was coming back home to visit her dad here in Indiana. So, 2 weekends in a row, we kind of went out, we hung out, decided to start dating, and Got engaged February of last year, and then she moved back here in the summer of 2006, and we were married in October. So it did happen pretty quickly, and she says she did have a moment in Iowa when we were gassing up the moving van, looking at me going, I don't even know this guy. But thankfully she stuck with it, and I know I'm better off for it because she's just amazing.
Well, you deserve a good woman, and sounds like you've got one. You have a little family on the way, so I think you'll have more fodder for skits, I think.
Very likely. When I married her, I also got dogs for the first time in my life, and we have two at the moment. One was hers, is a Dalmatian Lab, and then there's a puppy that she brought home, and she swore it was going to go to the shelter, but after I taught her how to fetch, I was like, you're not getting rid of my dog. And both of them make appearances in some of the videos I've done recently. One of them does a cameo in a strange cut that I call Raw Rats, which is Star Wars backwards. But basically taking some old stock footage that I have and telling the story of Star Wars through it, and Violet plays Chewbacca. And then I did a special movie with Daisy by herself, the Dalmatian that ate Des Moines, that it's kind of silly, and it was pure self-indulgence because I just happened to come across a big jar full of army men, and I was like, I'm going to make a horror film with this and have one of the dogs eat them. The really funny thing was, actually, Violet was the first one cast in the role, but she wouldn't go near the army men. I threw all kinds of dog food in there and everything. She just wouldn't go near it. But Daisy came through for us. I was really proud of her.
Well, you have, it sounds like you have a family around you that acts, even the dogs.
The dogs do. My wife won't. But okay. I'm not going to push her into it. She'll stand back and she'll hold the camera for me. So
That's all that really matters.
Exactly.
Now, in 2006, we had a near event. It really wasn't an event per se, but the Da Vinci Code came out.
Mm-hmm.
And this really kind of wound up a lot of different churches. And actually, I think it prepared them to actually talk to people that didn't go to church, which was kind of an interesting thing. In an arena that wasn't, well, come to our church and we'll tell you about God. It was more of, we need to tell you what this book's all about and also let you know what the Bible says so you know the difference so you can actually discuss it intelligently with people. And you wrote a play, which was a spoof of the Da Vinci Code that was actually performed. Tell me about all of that.
The play was called Da Vinci Code 2 Electric Boogaloo, and it was put on by a theater company up in Chicago. Matthew Moran Ministries was the one that put it on. It was their first production. And like you said, it was basically a send-up of the Da Vinci Code and mocked everything from, you know, the actual storyline and the ideas behind it. This character going around, it's put on like it's a character who's searching for the truth and everything, but it's really like a lot of people out there. It's a guy who's just made his mind up and he's looking to fill in the gaps. And, you know, I really kind of took and pulled that out of the storyline and out of the lead character. And, you know, we threw in the jokes about how poorly the book was written because, honestly, I thought it was a really terrible book. And we spoofed Tom Hanks's hair quite a bit. I think the performance that I saw, he changed wigs at least 6 or 7 times. And since Sir Ian McKellen was actually in the film as well, then the character that was based on him in the play, we just made him Magneto after he'd lost his powers in X-Men 3. So it was a really fun play, and as I understand, it played pretty well up in Chicago. And if anybody else is interested in it, I'm still pushing it out there. So,
yeah. Now you actually do something that I don't think is ever done. Is part of Righteous Insanity is a I'll write it your way, script writer.
Mm-hmm.
People can contact you and say, okay, I need a play for Father's Day. You know, that includes the Easter Bunny. And you'll go, okay, let me get you a couple of days and I'll get back to you.
Yeah. And they do come that strange too, Jeff.
Yeah. Well.
I've actually put up some of the stranger samples that I've had on the website right now, just as a, I think it's leaked off of the writing service page, but I had a church that wanted to do a murder mystery that took place at Studio 64 in the 1970s, featuring Dolly Parton, Dick Clark, John Travolta, William Shatner, and I wrote it. I had a lady who emailed me one time. She ran a puppet ministry for kids, and she had gotten a hold of a Dracula puppet, and she wanted 4 skits involving a Dracula puppet for children's ministry. So, I mean, there's people out there doing some strange stuff, but I mean, you know, hey, they're being creative, they're pushing the envelope, and in the case of the Dracula puppet, it's a case of using whatever resources you've got and doing the best you can with it. So, you know, I'm happy to help them out, and it's a lot of fun. Sometimes you come across stuff that's really, really fun and interesting, and then there's other stuff you just want to bury in a file and hope nobody ever sees it again.
Sure. I just think that it's interesting that you can get somebody like Marilyn Manson on MTV Awards making just outrageous comments about Christians. And, you know, if Christians ever come back, then people point to the Bible, oh, you're supposed to be loving. Hey, why are you? I think that it's great that Christians can use the same means that Hollywood and Madison Avenue and the record companies use to proliferate their views, that we can turn right it back around and proliferate, you know, biblical views, or, you know, satirizing those who don't believe in God as well. You know, I think it's very interesting now because, you know, there was a time when, you know, we all know that anything that had any kind of Christian overtones was just bad, real bad. I remember watching Thief in the Night, and boy, that was an awful experience for me. But I think things are really changing for the better. What do you think about entertainment with folks who have a belief in God, let's say? Maybe not just Christian, but I mean, what do you think?
I think that as more Christians are getting out there, as they're learning the process of screenwriting, filmmaking, acting, and everything, I think we're going to see the quality continue to improve. And I don't know if it'll ever have, you know, mass mainstream appeal. Obviously, it's very hot in Hollywood right now, thanks to The Passion of the Christ and Chronicles of Narnia. Christians are buying tickets, so Hollywood's wanting to sell them to us. And, you know, hey, praise God for that, you know. I mean, it's getting some good stuff out in the theaters. But the real problem has been, you know, we've had people in churches deciding, well, I should just make a Christian film. And, you know, people who don't know anything about screenwriting, anything about the three-act structure of a screenplay, are sitting down and basically writing sermonettes within a drama script and filming it with, you know, second-rate equipment and everything. And that's, you know, I mean, really, we kind of dug ourselves in a big hole before we ever got started. But the whole reason there's excellence in Hollywood, and if you want to call it that, and everything, and even with independent film, is there's just so many people out there trying to make it, and there's only so many spots to fill, you know. Mm-hmm. And the cream rises to the top. Those who are the most talented, obviously, are the ones who get the better deals, and those who can sell tickets are the ones who are going to get the priciest deals. And the more you have Christians out there, the more likely you are to find somebody who's a truly a great talent, you know, as a writer, as a director. And, you know, hopefully their talent will get noticed and they'll get moved up to the top, and you'll begin to see more of those things. And even in the Christian production houses, you know, it'll start to become more about storytelling rather than about beating somebody over the head with the Bible within a drama script, as I said.
Sure. It's interesting to me that there are certain moments that I really love reading in the Bible where Jesus was just there. He just happened to be there. He happened to be by the well talking to the woman. This wasn't in a setting in a synagogue when he had a scroll open, you know, and he was teaching her something. He was talking to her, you know, and some of the most amazing things happened when he was talking. You know, also when he was at a party where they were, now hold on to your hat here, they were drinking wine there.
Oh,
and they had and they had sinners there, and they had, you know, all kinds of tax collectors and all kinds of folks there, to the point where one of his disciples turned and said, do you know what kind of people are here, Jesus? I mean, you shouldn't be here. And he said, no, they need me here, that's why I'm here. And I think it's cool what you're saying, is that just kind of Christians need to really shake this mentality off of we need Billy Graham at the end of it to give the altar call, and that's going to make it a Christian film. I think the Bible is full of stories that are fantastic stories. You know, one of the videos you did is about, you know, women of the Bible, Leah and Rachel.
The Desperate Housewives of the Bible, yes.
Desperate Housewives of the Bible. You know, and again, some of those stories, I mean, the guy married two sisters. It doesn't take you more than 2 seconds to think about going, huh, that's kind of wacky. Well, you know, that's what's in there. So it's interesting to really kind of look beyond the stories in the Bible and see that they were real people. These are people in real circumstances. So, you know, the Bible is an incredible book. There's a lot to it, more than just Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And it's just cool that people now can kind of take little parts of it out and not be irreverent, but be funny with it. I mean, the whole Adam and Eve videos that you did are just funny.
Right. And there's, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of stories that don't get told. They don't get preached. And I've had a lot of fun just with sketch writing as well as with the filmmaking, just pulling some of those stories out. One of the Desperate Housewives that we highlighted in that short film was the wife of one of the Jewish soldiers. And it was in the story of Deborah, where Deborah had told the general of Israel's armies, you know, God wants you to go and command them in battle. And he said, I'll go if you go with me. And Deborah said, okay, but God's going to hand the king over to a woman, you know. And the battle happened, the king fled, and he ends up at this woman's house. She invites him in, and she feeds him a nice dinner. And as soon as he lays down for a nap, she drives a tent peg through his head, you know. And I'm hoping people see that scene, you know. One of the ideas behind putting that one in there was just, you know, they see this woman pull out a hammer and a sharp spike and go walking off camera. It's like, that's a story that I don't remember, you know. And hopefully they'll look that one up and maybe some of the others that they may not necessarily have heard of.
I find it interesting that, especially with like the Da Vinci Code, people will read so many books about the missing books of the Bible. They'll read books about the Bible, but they'll never actually pick up the Bible, for heaven's sake.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Actually read the thing. They'll get stuck. They'll get stuck in like maybe Numbers or Deuteronomy, and then kind of set it aside and say, "Where's that Michener novel at? I've got to get that." You know.
Right.
But if they continue to read, I think they will find some of the most incredible stories about the most incredible people, that some make good decisions and some make bad decisions. But people will never know that, because in church, all they talk about is Jonah and the whale, you know, feeding of the 5,000. But they'll never talk about Hosea and Gomer, you know,
right.
that God said, go marry the prostitute. I mean, that's kind of, you know, again, or talk about Ezekiel. You know, some of these prophets that pulled out their beard and cut their beard off and burnt part of their beard and ran over to the people and said, this is what God thinks of your kingdom, and this is what he's going to do to your people because you aren't, you know, faithful to him. You know,
yeah.
It's just, yeah.
And there's, I mean, it's some of the things those guys did. I was thinking the other day about doing something on Ezekiel with, you know, just what the home life of Ezekiel would have been if he had had a wife and some kids, you know. And mom says, hey, guess what? Dad's cooking dinner. And, you know, Dad cooked dinner over cow dung for an entire year. So imagine how the kids were excited when they found out Dad was making barbecue, you know. And, yeah, just pulling those things out just to try to get people to read, you know. And another example is right in the middle of the story of Joseph in Genesis. We've got Genesis chapter 38, I believe it is, the story of Judah and Tamar, which is one of the most sordid, twisted tales you'll ever read in your entire life. If you want drama, it's in the Bible. And actually, Judah and Tamar, I think there's actually a skit out there where they're actually on a talk show, kind of like it's a Jerry Springer story, you know, with the woman whose husband died and she was unable to conceive with either one of his brothers, and then she ends up seducing her own father-in-law, you know, and then Judah and Tamar, their child ends up in the lineage of Christ. I mean, how crazy is that?
The Star Wars laughs stop. On August 19th, 2007. On August 19th, 2007, TAT TV Live will bring you the Tatooine TV Retrospective Show. We will look back at the award-winning parody series and see its highs and its lows, and tell a number of stories about the pre-production work, the production work,
and what happened afterwards. We will have interviews of the actors, we'll have stories from the crew, and we'll have reflections by fans, all live on TalkShoe on August 19th, 2007. So make plans to be here. Grab your phone, grab your computer, maybe not at the same time, and join us on TalkShoe. That's swtalk.jrdonline.com.
It's like a Jerry Springer story, you know, with the woman whose husband died and she was unable to conceive with either one of his brothers, and then she ends up seducing her own father-in-law, you know. And then Judah and Tamar, their child ends up in the lineage of Christ. I mean, how crazy is that?
And read Hebrews 11, I believe, you know, and you read, it's the hall of faith, you know, these people that are strong in faith, and you're reading about all these great leaders in faith, and then all of a sudden you read Rahab the prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
She was strong in faith, you know, and it's interesting to see how God looks through circumstances and sees the heart of people and say the heart was good.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm not really here to kind of sort through, you know, the hithers and yons of somebody's life, but I think there's really more to God than you can hear from somebody on a televangelist show, or probably even from your own pastor. I think God is much more interesting than I think we have understood. And I guess that's really what I'm trying to say, is the Bible will give you facets of God that you probably have never thought about before, because the people in the Bible are just, they're real people. They make real big mistakes sometimes, and they actually, you know, make some really big changes too. And I'll never forget Gene Simmons saying that, you know, the most R-rated book he's ever read is the Bible. And I would agree with him, actually. I think there's, you know, I mean, I've always kind of joked that Judges is like the A-team, but actually Judges is, you know, it's probably the most intense, you know, blood-filled book probably there is. I mean, it was some wild stuff going on, Gideon and all that kind of stuff.
Just Samson alone and the body count that he had, you know, it tops Arnold Schwarzenegger
sure.
in any one of his movies.
Sure. You know, and I'm going to gingerly bring this up, but there's a point to it, the Monty Python film, The Life of Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before you faint, let me finish. what I loved about that movie is it really started to kind of fill in the gaps of the Bible. Now, I'm not saying there's anything left out like a lot of books that we read, but I'm saying that there were people that just kind of lived their life during the Bible times. And what's interesting is to watch a movie like The Life of Brian and see, you know, the teachers that were standing in the courtyard, and they all were teaching what they felt, you know, were words to live by. And you don't get that picture from the Bible. Again, I'm not saying anything's left out, but I'm saying the Bible would be just, you know, reams and reams of the biggest book in the whole world if they had every angle of life during that day. But I think it's interesting that, you know, even The Life of Brian kind of brings, you know, certain things to life, like people in the back of the crowd that couldn't hear. And that's kind of where I get some of my ideas about, like, you know, Star Wars. You know, why aren't there any bathrooms there? I never saw one. And so it's that kind of thought of, if it makes sense here, it should make sense there. And if people are a certain way here, then they should be there. And it's just, you know, the Bible is a much richer book, I think, than people think.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring up Life of Brian. According to my brother, the whole genesis behind that was that the Pythons had decided they wanted to do a spoof of the Bible. They wanted to parody Christianity. So they all got copies of the New Testament. They read through it. They came back for the next writer's meeting. And after some small talk and everything, one of them spoke up and said, I can't mock this. You know, if people live their life by the way this man lived his life and by what he preached, you know, this world will be in a different place. And so the angle they took with that was the fact that people are looking, they're looking for truth, they're looking for something to live by, and they miss it, you know, because they won't shut up long enough to listen and to really see what the message is. And it's all about how people miss it, because, you know, the same time the events of Brian's life are unfolding, which leads to its tragic ending, for poor Brian, you know, Christ is over here and he's doing his, you know, his great story is happening, but the people are missing it because they're busy chasing Brian off and trying to decide, you know, they're arguing over whether the pomegranate is an important symbol or whether they should go with one sandal on or one sandal off. And, you know, just all the things, it's really funny to me that that one scene in particular really is great when they're arguing about, you know, what Brian has just done, and they're already starting to split off into factions, just like Christianity is just splintered into thousands of factions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's, I think something really cool to me that's really going on these days is that, you know, we can have, you know, a live circus in a church and people won't go. They won't go.
Mm-hmm.
You can have any singer from any band anywhere. You can give away free whatever, and people just won't go to church because they've been burned over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But they can sure go to YouTube and kind of surf around and watch a funny video about a door.
Yeah.
And then start to think, well, maybe there is something else I need to think about, maybe.
Right. It's funny. I came across a video on YouTube that was it's a spoof of Christian comedians and the jokes that they tell. And when you step back and think about it, they're really not that funny. You know, I know some, and I don't mean to knock on Christian stand-up comedians because I know a lot of them that are hysterical. They're really, really funny people. They do some great stuff. But, you know, it's just a great little send-up, and it's a good way to sit back and laugh at yourself. And they were just some of the most angry, venomous comments on this video from Christians who are saying, obviously you've never heard of Mark Lowry or Chandra Pierce or Mike Warnke, and you can say what you want about a couple of those, but, you know, my comment back that I filled in was, you know, we have fallen so far away in being in touch with the world that we're supposed to be reaching out to. We have to find a point of common ground to even begin a dialogue to have any credibility whatsoever to reach them. And what better common ground can we agree on than we Christians are ridiculous? You know, and if we could look and see ourselves through their eyes and see just how ridiculous we act sometimes when we're being holier than thou or, you know, going through whatever crazy things that we've come up with, we'd have a great place to start a dialogue, you know, and say, you know what, we're Christians, we're imperfect, you know, these are the ridiculous things we believe, these are the things that we do, you know, but eventually lead them around, this is the difference, this is what we have, you know, and this is what justifies us and this is what's going to save us in the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you can't laugh about yourself, you're really in trouble. I mean, that's far delusion to me.
Yeah. Oh, laughter's, you know, humor is and is the great equalizer. If you look at a lot of the great comedies, especially like back in the 1930s, you know, it was all about, you know, comedy is about bringing the high and mighty being brought down to the low level. You know, and in the end, we're all sinners. You know, we're all fallen, and, you know, as much as we might like to put on airs, you know, we're all imperfect, and, you know, when you see the Marx Brothers or the Three Stooges, you know, throwing pies in the face of the rich, snooty elite, you know, that's what it's all about, is, you know, reminding ourselves that, hey, we're not perfect, you know, there's somebody else out there who can make us, you know, make us perfect and make us over in his image, but, you know, we need a reminder that,
right.
You know, everybody can slip on a crack on the sidewalk, you know? It can happen to anybody. It doesn't matter who you are. Everybody belches. Everybody has gas in an inappropriate time at some point or another. You know, and I think every one of these things is just one of God's little ways of reminding us, you know what? You know, you're not perfect. You know, stop trying to fool yourself. You need me in your life. And not to say that, you know, gas and belching is a sin. But, you know, you don't understand.
I'll have to get my wife on this call. She'll have some words about that.
My wife and I have many discussions about whether or not God intended belching and gas to be funny.
Yeah, that's why Adam slept on this part of the valley and Eve slept over there anyway. I do think that we are now coming into an arena where God is calling people to go to very different places to express their talents. You know, I remember the highest you know, calling you could have would be to be a preacher. And I am not a preacher, but God has given me a love for people who really despise Christians and actually are opposed to them. And I have really seen some really incredible connection points and some great friendships where I can actually, you know, relay and give them God's love in a way that they would never get it if they went to church. And it's really incredible the new ways that I think God has actually opened the door to reach, and we don't have to fly to Africa because there's a bunch of people that need it here in America. It's really cool to see the different ways that God uses you, and it's cool to see the effect that you have on people that want to learn how to act and probably write and all this kind of stuff. So I wanted to definitely have you on the show one more time to just kind of highlight what's been going on in your life and just, you know, congratulate you on being a husband and a daddy-to-be. And just let everybody know to visit your website and check out your videos and, you know, maybe think about, you know, what's really inside of them. But
I appreciate
your time.
Not a problem. So
now, give us an idea of kind of what's coming around the corner. Anything that you want to kind of tell us about right now?
Well, like I said, I've got a DVD that I'm hoping to release in June. Right now, the title of it is Holy Shorts, and I think that's going to stay that way. I had toyed with naming it after a favorite line from Night Court, calling it the Snake Pit of Chucky's Mind, but I don't know if the Christian buying public is quite ready for that yet. Yeah. But it's basically it's kind of like a Kentucky Fried Movie / Amazon Woman on the Moon type thing. It's a bunch of short films. Some of them are just a few seconds long. Some of them run for 5 or 10 minutes. And it's a compilation of stuff that I've been working on the last couple of years. The Welcome to Hell video is going to be on there, Desperate Housewives of the Bible, the How to Pick Up a Christian Babe. Actually, also one thing that's going to be featured, and I've been talking with them a lot this week, there's a drama film group down in Tampa, Florida called AV12. And I'm going to have at least two of their short films on here. One of them is called Toasties, and it's it's kind of a infomercial / news story about a new nuclear powered toaster. If I remember right, it's nuclear powered, and it's a really, really neat parable that they wrote. It's really, really quite an interesting little film. And then there's one that I wrote that they produced and directed called Worship Crashers, which is it's a parody of it's kind of based on Wedding Crashers, obviously, but it's a parody about people who church hop and people who they go to church, they worship, they sing, they pass themselves off as a regular on Sunday, but the last thing in the world they want to do is sign a membership role and get involved in the church. So real excited about having them involved with it. You know, and it's just been really neat, some of the little things coming together. There's going to be some stuff from the GetYoked.net, which is the Christian singles parody website that I put together about a year ago. We're going to have some of the video personals from that on there. Going to be featuring some music by Natalie Gilbert, who I don't know if you've talked to her on any other podcasts or not, but Natalie's an amazing artist, a great writer. She has an incredible heart. And if you want to get to know people that are also dreamers and that can help you achieve what you need to, you got to get to know Natalie. Because
yep.
If she has a spiritual gift, she has a spiritual gift of networking.
Yeah.
So that's the big thing that's coming up. I'm always working on screenplays, and I've been working with some guys out in Arizona with kind of a Romeo and Juliet story set against the whole immigration struggle that's going on with an illegal immigrant who falls in love with the daughter of a politician in the state of Arizona. Got a number of other scripts going on. Nothing really big happening just yet, but screenwriting is just one of those things you keep plugging away, rewriting and studying it, and, you know, it's all a matter of finding somebody out there who's got the money to produce it, who likes what you do, you know, and God willing, if that opportunity comes along, I'm going to be excited for it.
Yeah. Well, for sure. You know, you are a great talent, but you're also a great guy and you've got a great heart. And, I'm just very fortunate to have met up with you via email. And, you know, we've done some great great things together. And anything, of course, I can do to help, just let me know. So.
Yeah, I should also mention here, Jeff is going to be on the video. There's going to be a great little scene of two dogs having a theological argument, and actually I just got his voiceover last night, but he's going to be portraying one of the dogs in the video, and I'm real excited about that one. It's just one of those silly little things that just comes to you while you're filming your dogs wrestling around in the backyard going, you know what would be really funny with this?
Well... I'm glad to be a dog in your DVD, man. Anything I can do, I'm there. Well, John, thank you so much for your time, and please give your wife a little hug and tell her thank you for letting me steal you away for a little bit. We are going to have John back. We're going to be doing some interesting little cult science fiction movie show talk and other little comedy things going on. So. John has a wide vision. He's got a lot of things in his mind, and so just fortunate to be friends with him. So you're going to hear more from him, and I thank you for being on the show tonight. Thanks, John.
Absolutely. Looking forward to I've actually got Radar Men on the Moon, which I just recently picked up on TV right now, but would love to talk cult films and, you know, just continue to broaden the minds of people out there who may not necessarily know about some of the great movies that you've probably never seen and would never see in a million years if somebody didn't tell you, hey, this is really fun. So we'll get to that one day.
Fun. And we will do that. Take care, John.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. See you later, man.
See ya.
Bye. And for more of the Roni Zone Productions, you can visit JRDonline.com. And for more of John Cosper's work, you can visit RighteousInsanity.com. And just one more quick thing before we go, I want to mention that on May 19th, we're going to have a special TAT TV Live. We're going to interview the crew of The Force Among Us, Star Wars documentary. It's really incredible. And Chris Mock is going to be back, and we have some special guests. We're going to talk about Celebration 4 in Los Angeles, how to make that just the best time ever for you. And we're also going to have some live sketch comedy that day. And also we are going to, in August 19th, 2007, we're also going to have a Tatooine TV retrospective. That's going to cover the whole of the Tatooine TV show and all the episodes and all the craziness and all that. So for the upcoming Roni Zone Radio Lives, I need you to type in this URL, rzrtalk.jrdonline.com. And that's for Roni Zone Radio Live. And for the TAT TV Live, it's swtalk.jrdonline.com. So if you get lost, if you didn't write that down, what I just told you, you can go to jrdonline.com, and I assure you that that information is going to be there. One more quick thing is if you're a MySpace person, you can visit myspace.com/Jeff Roni. That's J-E-F-F. R-O-N, like no, E-Y, and that's our page on MySpace. So anyway, check us out there. Please vote for us on Dig.com, Podcast Alley. Let some folks know about us, and we will continue to be here on TalkShoe. And we're going to be doing a lot of Roni Zone Radio shows over the next couple of days. So thanks for listening to me blabber, and I hope you enjoy John Cosper, and we will see you next time on Roni Zone Radio.
We are listening to an actual ear laughing. Certain doctors say that ears should laugh at least 10 minutes every day to be healthy. There are two known ways to help your ears to laugh. One, grab a four-leaf clover while piggyback riding on Bigfoot on the inauguration day of the first female president. Or number two, listen to the Ear Giggles podcast at jrdonline.com. The choice is yours. But if you don't want to wait too long, then head over to jrdonline.com now. The Ear Giggles podcast. A lot of giggles in a little time.
Join Disney theme park enthusiast and your host, Jeff from Houston, on his adventures and misadventures through the Disney resorts in Florida and California on the Meandering Mouse podcast. Meandering Mouse is a personable take on Disney attractions large and small, including quality stereo audio recorded live in the parks, unique commentary, and the occasional wacky surprise. If you listen to Disney podcasts, you should be listening to the Meandering Mouse. Download the Meandering Mouse today from the iTunes Music Store or meanderingmouse.com.
Okay, here's what most people think a Star Wars fan is. They're dysfunctional people who never married, still live in their parents' basement, and have better conversations with toys than with real people. Now, Star Wars fans have been the punchline of many talk show host monologues, stand-up comedians, and smart aleck blog posts. But one man, really because the idea of his sister, decided to set the record straight. Chris Mock put together a Hollywood film crew to circle the globe and tell the truth. The truth about what a Star Wars fan really is without a punchline. The Force Among Us introduces us to writers, teachers, speakers, podcasters, and Star Wars fans of all kinds to reveal why people are drawn to the Star Wars phenomenon and how those fans express their fandom. We see fans who love all things Star Wars, and then those fans who love Star Wars but are also critics of what Lucas created as well. So if you think you know everything about what a Star Wars fan is, Chris Mock offers you a view that will show you The Force Among Us. The Force Among Us DVD will be available May 25th, 2007. For more information, please visit theforceamongus.com.